Welcome to Clinical Edge Soundbites.
G'day everyone and welcome to Clinical Edge. My name's Brett Vaughan. I'm a clinical educator and researcher at the University of Melbourne.
My name's Wani. I'm a paediatrician and a clinical educator as well at the University of Melbourne for over a decade. We're hoping with each episode to deliver just sharp, practical insights in just a few minutes. We're going to invite different experts to come and talk about different aspects of clinical education.
This is about what you can do to help improve your learners, but also to improve your own clinical education practice.
Welcome to Clinical Edge, and we're back with Professor Liz Malloy to talk a little bit more about language in feedback. So Liz, to get started, can you explain why language matters when we're giving feedback in clinical settings?
Sure. So I think about the systematic review that studies the effect of feedback. And one of the results of that review is that feedback can improve performance, but it can also damage performance and even have negative consequences to identity. So it's not neutral. And so our language choice becomes really important around how the learner feels in a feedback interaction and what they choose to take from it, what they act on and what they choose not to act on. So everything around creating psychological safety, often we do that with our energy, we do it with our body language, but we also do it with our language. So word choice can be important, turn taking can be really important. So you're providing a platform to hear from the learner about what their concerns are, but also what their perspectives are on their own performance.
You touched there on neutrality and word choice. So if I'm a learner, what are the common words or phrases that would trigger me to be defensive and to really push back on the feedback that I'm getting?
What do we know from the research? I think we know, and from speaking with our students as well, I think students don't appreciate things like, we all think you're terrible, or we've all observed that. You know, that kind of groupthink is very hard. It's what we'd call final vocabulary. You can't debate that. And so that pins people in a corner, strips away the agency. So I would say that's not a goodie. The other one is when you phrase your observation as a fact as opposed to an observation. So I could say, Brett, from my perspective, what I observed was this. That may come across to the patient potentially in this way. Which is quite different from saying, Brett, you were rude when you approached Mr. Smith. So, you know, one is saying this is a claim, this is something that I've observed. The other one is stating that as fact. So trying to stay away from the highly objective means there's no wriggle room for the learner to come into that conversation.
Yeah, that's very helpful, Liz. And what about language or phrases you think would be useful to help clarify behaviour and have good impact?
One thing that learners really don't like is, you know, you're on track, you just need to practice a bit more. You just need to hang around a little bit longer. So that sort of idea of you'll get there if you just hang around, we know learners really don't like. The couple of things that I would advise for supervisors, one is to keep your wording very much grounded in your observation. The second thing is to check in around understanding. So really get the learner to play back what they've heard, but also the extent to which it has resonated or not. And that's a really good way to sort of bring open that conversation. When you start to move into kind of strategies for improvement, what's going to happen next, that's the most important time to close the loop and say, Wani, thanks so much for the session. In summary, what are you going to take from it? And really that's where you get the most important feedback as a supervisor. Are you on the same page? If there's a discrepancy, now is your chance to get in there.
You're an early year clinical educator, haven't necessarily had a lot of experience. So what are short, actionable phrases that can make feedback impactful?
This is what we'd call linguistic hooks. These short phrases, and it's funny because we probably don't spend enough time talking about them. We talk around principles of giving feedback, and they resonate with clinicians. But actually, the language choice and the kind of, if you like, those short phrases can be really helpful. It's a bit like when you're learning to interrupt someone to say, Brett, is this an okay time for a quick chat? these are the sort of linguistic hooks that you pick up and you start to kind of fold into your repertoire. So as a supervisor, simple things like, Brett, can you tell me two things that went well and two things that you'd do differently next time? If you share your perspective, how does that resonate with your experience, Brett? Is there anything else that you noticed in your own performance that I haven't raised so far? You might say something like, Brett, your observation was this, my observation was that. There's a little bit of a difference there. What do you think you're going to do next time you have a chance to undertake a similar performance? What two things do you want to focus on based on our discussion?
Yeah, that sounds really helpful, Liz. So we've talked a lot about language and given some really good examples of how to make your language impactful and also learner-centered and constructive. What would be your key takeaways?
Okay, so this is slightly left field. So far we've talked about using language that orientates to the learner's own performance. However, what we've found when we've videotaped successful feedback interactions, or if you like, effective feedback interactions that make a difference to learners, the quality that we pick out in those effective conversations is when the supervisor does some storytelling. So they actually talk about, for example, their own practice and what they find difficult. Or they talk about when they were at year two in their physiotherapy degree, what they were struggling with and why it's difficult at that time with that degree of experience. And what that storytelling does, A, it can normalize that we're all on a growth trajectory and it's not easy learning in a clinical environment. But secondly, it helps the learner to orientate to what does good practice look like. What we know is that when people have a better understanding of this is what I'm aiming for, they can start to join the dots between how they're performing and what's expected. And that is intrinsically much more empowering for the learner than to be told, you're not doing this well. I take it back to parenting, that idea of please don't do these things, as opposed to when soccer players are doing really well, they tend to look after their nutrition and make sure they're eating protein after they train. You know, your daughter might say, oh, I don't ever have protein after I train. It sounds a little bit manipulative, but I think there's something really powerful about having a conversation about standards of practice and allowing the learner to make that leap about how their own practice compares to that.
Thanks, Liz. Next episode, we're going to think about how to receive feedback. We'd like to acknowledge that our podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders past and present, and also recognise any of our First Nations clinical educators who are listening to us today.
Feel free as well to give us feedback to make sure that we are targeting exactly what makes things useful for you wherever you are and wherever you've been a teacher. So make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss any episodes of the upcoming Clinical Edge Soundbites.